Broadcasting live from a cornfield, this is the Monstrous Feminine Podcast, the film club where we dissect the eerie intersections of gender and horror. My name is Taya, and I'm joined by They Who Walk Behind the Rose,
Louisa,
and Zeba.
This month, we'll talk about children and horror. Mila is off sick this podcast episode, but she'll be back soon. We will be covering the 1984 horror classic Children in the Corn, directed by Fritz Kirsch, the 1999 psychological thriller The Sixth Sense, directed by M. Night Shyamalan, and the 2001 horror mystery, The Devil's Backbone, directed by Guillermo del Toro. Before we get into the film, go ahead and follow us on Spotify, YouTube, or the Apple Podcast app. You can find all of our links on our Instagram at The Monstrous Feminine Podcast. We also recently launched a Substack where you can get updates about the podcast, behind-the-scenes notes from episodes, research, and also some of our favorite films and short film reviews. So be sure to head over to our Instagram, and we will also have the link for that in our link tree.
In Children of the Corn, a couple named Vicky and Bert happen upon a small town named Gatlin, ruled by a murderous cult of children. After exploring the deserted town, they learn from Gatlin's only friendly child inhabitants, siblings Job and Sarah, that the children killed all of the adults a few years back. They discover that the children, led by a fellow child and preacher, Isaac, and his subordinate, Malachi, commit regular sacrifices, all to satisfy the will of a mysterious monster living in the cornfield.
He who walks behind the rose will decide your fate.
Don't just sit there. Seize him, punish him, cut him down, I command you. I am the word and the giver of his laws. Disobedience to me is disobedience to him. Do it now or your punishment shall be 1,000 times 1,000 deaths, each more horrible than the last.
They are tired of your talk, Isaac. I've shown them what I can do. Cut the woman down. Put Isaac in her place.
So, does anybody have any corn related stories? I can only think of the stupid like meme, which is a giant thing of ear of corn, and it's like country girls do it better.
You know, we're not talking about that kind of uses for corn. Thank you, Louisa. The country girls make do.
Oh, that's it. That's it. That's it. Not country girls do it better. That's country girls make do. But anyway, does anyone have any non-X-rated corn stories?
That your body does not digest corn, so it comes out in your poo?
We're really lowering the tone.
We really are. But every time I see this movie, I'm just like, how do you eat so much corn? Like, that can't possibly be healthy for your digestive tract, because, like, that's a really a strain.
Yeah, we eat a lot of corn in an American diet.
I sound like a hotep. Stop eating corn.
It's true, but it's like corn syrup is in everything, cornstarch is in everything, corn-based snacks are in everything. That's the truth. We live in a monoculture. I actually have a lot of opinions on corn. I don't know if this has come out before.
I can't wait for Mila to listen to how deranged we sound.
Okay, Mila's about to learn the fucking truth about Monsanto. Okay, so my parents used to live on a cornfield, like on a corn farm in Iowa. So it looked just like this movie. It was the last house in town at the edge of town, and it was owned by this fucking evil Monsanto farmer. And I, a teen, obviously used to, sorry to my mom if you're listening to this, smoke weed in the cornfield in the middle of the night. Now, I, in retrospect, looking back, I absolutely could have gotten lost in there. I don't know, our listeners who are not American, who haven't like driven on an American highway and haven't seen corn and soybean fields, them shits go for miles and miles and miles and miles. It is not an exaggeration to say that you get a few meters in and you can get lost for hours. Like genuinely, when the corn is above your head height, it's really hard to find your way out if you start walking in the wrong direction. Now imagine you're high. And it looks the same in every fucking direction. And my little ass used to go out there, roll up a little J or a spliff or
something. Were you using the corn husks to roll?
I should have. And I would take the dog with me. And I think that is probably how I found my way out, is the dog probably had a better sense of direction than I did. But I would be like wandering around, dead of night, it's not middle of nowhere, but it's like very dark, like very few lights. And I would smoke weed and then find my way back to the house. But there were sounds and there were occurrences and there's a lot of things.
There were happenings.
Happenings that can happen in a cornfield. Alien abductions, mysterious smoke beasts, as we will cover, murderous cults, general ragamuffin children looking for no good who hang out and make out in the cornfields. It's not an exaggeration. Teens making out. You'll find that out there. Teens doing opioids. You could find that out there. I'm corn fed myself. I won't deny it.
I'm corn fed.
I'm from the South and we actually do not eat as much corn.
It's true. It's a Midwest, like, you know, middle of the country, smack, like, flyover state type of diet. But this is just to say, not Americans. This is just what America looks like. Like, most of it does not look like New York and LA.
Well, I don't really have anything to say to that, Zay, but other than you have, like, no fear of God, the way I would not be walking into the corn at night.
Where else was I supposed to smoke?
You defy, like, POC fear in a way that is really genre bending.
And quite frankly, who's coming into the cornfield to get me if they smell it? No one. Y'all are afraid, and I'm brave.
The Monstrous Feminine is on most platforms, so please go follow us and chat with us. You can find us on Spotify, YouTube, Patreon, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and now even Substack. If you engage with our content, you might just get a shout out, and our next episode is our Witch of the Week. This episode, our Witch of the Week is going out to someone special. It is Reem, who we work with at Gross Encounters and recently spoke to us about their love of this film. As someone who has met Reem, I can say that they are pretty damn cool. And I enjoy being a Zillennial with you, and I hope to see you soon, gal friend.
Thank you so much for supporting us, being an OG pod fan, and for wanting to work with us. We are eternally grateful, and I can't wait to meet you in the flesh, IRL.
Me as well. Still very jealous to have not met this particular Witch of the Week.
Friendly reminder that we're also on Patreon and Substack. You can find all of our links and information on our social media. Please support us. Any contribution helps.
So, I think children in horror is such a vast, like, there's so many films where it's applicable to. So I've kind of conceptualized it as, like, where the plot is centered around, like, children or, like, loss of innocence and that kind of thing. But just like a quick canon overview, there's Village of the Damned in 1960. There's The Omen in 1976. There's, of course, the Chucky franchise beginning with Child's Play in 1988. There's Let the Right One in 2008, which we've done on the pod. There's kind of a twist on child or playing with our conceptions of child with Orphan in 2009. And then more recently in 2022, there's Skinamarink. Lots of Stephen King's own horror writing and whatnot features children, like The Shining in 1980, Firestarter in 1984, Pet Sematary in 1989, It in 2017. We on this podcast have done films like Veronica Franz and Severin Fields' Goodnight Mommy. We did that as a bonus episode once. And we did The Lodge as a main episode for Christmas one year. And those are really good, like, children in horror, I think, depictions, those two. But yeah, and I think it's interesting that children are so frequently used or deployed in horror, almost more as, like, a device than strict characters, because they have so much symbolism behind them. Like, children symbolize innocence, so, like, their corruption in a film is, like, particularly horrific. Like, that's how you know shit's going down, is, like, when a kid dies or when a kid gets possessed. Like, that's the reason why The Exorcist was so horrifying at the time, because it was, like, a little girl. Kids also symbolize, like, the future. Like, so when children are dying, it's, like, seen as, like, particularly or corrupted, it's seen as, like, particularly apocalyptic, I think. There's, like, a self-conscious sense of parental failure or guilt, like, with nature versus nurture when you have, like, a child as the antagonist. Also, according to Screen Rant, kids especially aren't equipped to handle the complicated emotions of things not going their way, and they can make for uncontrollable and unpredictable antagonists. I think that's also true, particularly in, like, The Lodge that we've done. Like, you see children kind of behaving erratically because they hate their father's new partner after their parents divorced. And we've talked about how children are capable of, like, truly horrible things. They don't quite have that moral sense of development yet all the time. Also, in a book called Children and Childhood in the works of Stephen King, edited by Debbie Olson, They discuss how King's use of child characters within the framework of horror raises questions about adult expectations of children, childhood and what that means, of the American family itself, of child agency, and the nature of fear and terror for or like by children. Like, what makes children such a like rich site for horror to you?
There's the child movies where the child is the person who's afraid, and there's also children in horror movies where the child is the person you're afraid of. And those have like, I don't know, they do overlap, because sometimes you're afraid of the child because they know something you don't, or like in The Sixth Sense, they see things that you don't, or they are freaking you out with their behavior or they're acting out. But like Stephen King books and films in particular do a lot of both at the same time, especially for adults being afraid of children. Like Pet Sematary, I know it got outvoted and we will get to it, but Pet Sematary is a classic, like, I'm afraid of a baby right now. That's very different than The Children of the Corn, where they're sort of like teens and preteens, or It, where they're teens and preteens and they're bullies towards each other. They're very violent. They have these like terrible expressions of like anger and pent up emotions. I think Stephen King gives a lot of credence to the big emotions of children and puts them on the same level as adults, and kind of says that they are capable of just as much violence and corruption as adults because they're learning from the adult world. So this we also considered briefly for folk horror, and I think that because this is, it could also overlap with folk horror. It's a commentary on religion in the same way that a lot of the folk horror overlapped with religion and commentary on like religious hysteria. I think this could have fallen into that category, sort of arguing that like children are just as impressionable to fall into these like culty behaviors as adults were. Like, we're sitting around wondering like why they're listening to Isaac. He's maybe like 12 years old and has inhaled a bunch of helium. Like, he has no authority to the way that he conducts himself. He has proven himself to be like a prophet for whatever this like creature is. And I do think that adults, like if an adult person had been able to like prove, right, that they get messages from this monster, I think adults would have also fallen for this like type of cult, right? It's just like about the guy who claims to know more about the scary thing than you do. And in this case, it was Isaac. So I think it's the reason that it's children and not adults is just to say that like they are mimicking the things that adults do. The way that they're going to like crucify this woman is because they've seen it in adult Christian imagery. The way that they're going to like have a religious text and a prophet, and they don't want the little girl with the shining who's able to like draw the pictures to predict what happens. Like, they don't want it to get out that like she has this gift. Like, these are all like a theme and a plot that could have happened totally with adults, and it would have made just as much sense, if not more sense. So I always interpreted it as like regular folk horror plot, but also the element of childhood is just like a mirroring effect. Like, it's a mirroring of our society. The fact that the movie starts out with this like religious radio program and like what is assumed to be like religious nuts from the perspective of the two main characters. And I'm sure, I think the short story was probably written in the 70s, and then if the movie came out in the 80s, like that's just out of Satanic Panic and this real culty era and this like anti-religious era and this anti-organized religion time. And I think it's, I guess it was sort of making the argument that like children can be just as like zealous in their religious fervor, and sort of commenting on like how quickly new beliefs can replace your old beliefs. And it's not just like a problem of childhood, I suppose. But I would have as easily talked about this in the folk horror episode, because they do create their own folklore. And it is middle of nowhere, and like all those like tick check boxes that we had for that category.
Yes, this is one of the kind of folk horror example films, but for America, American folk horror. But as Adam Scoville in Fiend in the Furrows essay categorizes folk horror as about like the landscape, isolation, skewed moral beliefs, and as we love to say, happenings. And in Woodlands Dark and Days Bewitched, a documentary, it's we know these tropes are that it has like an isolated or seemingly backwards community. There are pagan sacrifices. It's about like the return of the repressed urges. and like connection to the land. So we definitely have like things like that here. And like you just said, there is a self-conscious quality to folk horror as well. Like Adam Scoville says that folk horror often creates its own folklore. And as you've just said, like the children make up their own, like there is always or often a tangible supernatural element that does exist. Like we do see that in this film at the very end. There is a monster in the cornfield, but like the way they act and like go off from that and like the things that they do, insane. And they've created their entire lore and probably like led to so many of them being like murdered or killing each other.
I mean, is the monster telling Isaac what to do, or is he just using the monster as an excuse? Is that not, that's not clear to me.
I think it's meant to be deliberately ambiguous. And I think this film is balls to the walls insane.
I've seen this movie a ton, like as a kid, but then I realized I didn't have any distinctive memory of anything that happened except for certain scenes. And I was like, no, I have to like know context and stuff in order to talk about it on the pod. So I hastily watched it at the ass crack of this morning, which was exhausting. So I called my sister up on the phone and was like, I'm going to give you a play-by-play of this movie. So it's fun for me. And she was like, let's do it, boo. And I have to say, in a horror movie, I rarely see people not do stupid things. But in this one in particular, I've never seen people so eager to go into their death. Going into an abandoned town that someone told you not to go into and being like, maybe we should explore, is insane behavior. And then also when they first hit the little boy in the road and he like gets out of the car and it's like a mysterious bloody suitcase I must investigate in the cornfield. And she's somehow asleep in the car in the span of 6 minutes, maybe? I don't know. And he just leaves her in the car asleep. You just hit a child. And she's like, this is the perfect time for a nap.
I thought she was like so traumatized. Her brain was like blackout.
And her man just kind of leaves her in the car after he has discovered that this kid's throat was slit. He's like, I'm gonna leave her to sleep in the car with the doors open.
No, the doors were locked.
You cannot convince me that he loves this girlie because he abandoned her so many times in this movie. And also he doesn't, like, as he knows he hit the kid and he lies to her initially. He's like, yeah, it is totally an animal. Yeah. And he talks to her for like a good 5 minutes in the car. While he is a literal physician and does not try at all to resuscitate the child or do any sort of emergency medical procedures. He's just like, he did. Let's throw a tarp on it. Throughout this entire movie, he does absolutely zero medical care for anyone who's injured. Even like at the end, the children are like nursing his wounds. I don't know if he needed that job in Seattle. Like maybe he needs to go back to the drawing board because he was not physicianing.
Where's Grey's Anatomy set? Isn't that Seattle?
Well, maybe that's where he's going.
Yeah, maybe he's going to Grey's Anatomy. All they do there is like fuck and have sex. And it seems like he doesn't like his wife enough. So he'd probably cheat too.
Then he's like, when they are exploring the town and the kids are like, yeah, those other fuckers are straight up murderous and crazy. He's like, I'm going to leave you in this house and like go to see the other kids. Also, and then she sees them like coming in the house with the sickles and she like is like, what are you doing here? What do you want? I'm like, why are you not turning in the other direction and running? What? They just walk into danger in this movie in a way that is so jarring to me that I was like, I am starting to think that they are just simply dumb. How did they make it through life in the 70s? Wait, this is like the 70s, 80s, whatever. How did they make it through those troubling times with literally no sense of self-preservation? These people just walk into danger. Like he rolls up in the cornfield with a bunch of kids with weapons and is like, oh my gosh, let her go. It was just insane. Insane plot behavior.
They're not just dumb. They're city slickers. And not only does he hate his fiance, not fiance, because he will not propose to her. This is like the crux
of it. She's a stay-at-home girlfriend.
And like, keep using the excuse that he's too cool and too modern to marry her. Girl is desperate. Like from the first scene, she keeps making these like haha ribbing him jokes about like how she definitely does want to get married, and the two of them make fun of religion together, and that's sort of like, I don't know, the thing that like bonds them in this situation is like, oh, how weird is this small town, how backwards is like middle America with their Bible radio, but haha, wouldn't it be so funny if we got married? And then he's like, nah, I don't think, you know, that's never gonna happen. Like, I am going to be a very successful doctor and you are going to be my stay-at-home bed maiden. And that is a perfectly progressive and fine type of relationship to have in the 1980s. I love them. I think they're really entertaining. That poor girl is a victim.
To be fair, she's a bit hysterical and useless. Like, she's for sure infantilized in the script when she says things like, where are we? And are we safe? When they're like, A, so clearly lost. And so she's a bit infantilized as like in her depiction, but and like a bit hysterical. But he is so patronizing and so mean and also ignores her. He like basically swats away her concerns. And I was just very curious about their relationship. So I went and I read the short story. This is based off a, I'm sure everyone knows, but it's based off a short story by Stephen King. And oh my God, is it way horrendous in terms of their marriage. Like, so compared to the these are the differences between the short story and the film. But it takes place over 12 years in the short story as opposed to just 3. And Job and Sarah don't exist as characters in the short story. It's centered on still like Bert and Vicky, but they're on the verge of divorce. And Bert is like frequently physically abusive. He just like randomly beats her at one point in the short story, like out of fucking nowhere. Also, they both die in the short story. Vicky dies first by having her eyes ripped out and her mouth stuffed with corn on a crucifix. And also in the short story, Malachi has like a pregnant young partner. So it gets a little wild in the short story. And yeah, their relationship's worse. And I would say after like reading the story, I was like, oh, their marriage is perfect watching the film because it was like that bad on the page.
I was telling my sister the kids in this film really chose to live life on hard mode because like they went from having nice houses and beds and milkshakes and hamburgers to like literally doing backbreaking labor and having to commit suicide at 19. Like shit's crazy. I don't know.
I don't know how many weeks it had been since the massacre of the adults, but like they were running low on supplies and had no means. They were like, oh, we can make corn fuel. And I'm like,
country kids make do.
I also thought it was insane that they were following like a 10-year-old and some of them were way older than him. And they were like, this sounds plausible.
But yeah, he sounded like he inhaled helium.
Yeah. Originally when I was younger, I thought all of them were like possessed. But then, like, when I saw it this time, I was like, wait, you mean to tell me they weren't possessed? They literally just followed him up. Like, because as soon as, like, he comes back from the dead, they're like, oh, fuck, this is getting weird. They all, like, disperse. And I was like, wait a second. They weren't possessed. They just willingly did this?
According to IMDb, fun fact, that Isaac, he's supposed to be, like, you know, preteen, I guess. But John Franklin, the actor who played him, was 24 at the time of filming.
24?
24. Crazy. Picking up on what you're talking about, Taya, with like all the kind of craziness and like why do the characters act like, I think this is so evidently based on a short story to me, in the sense that short story as a form, or like a novella, so any kind of like shorter form writing, I think is a really fruitful ground for horror. Like, think Henry James, Ray Bradbury, Shirley Jackson, Angela Carter, Mariana Enriquez, Octavia Butler, Tanana Reeve do. When there's such an economy of words, you just accept like the truths and the lore as like existing. Like, I think when we talk about horror films, we're often like, oh, we need some more characterization. We need some bad. But in short stories, like there's no time for that. You just kind of like, it will be like, oh, my door and there's a monster. And you're unquestioning as you might, in a way that you might not be if you're reading like a novel. And I think that like unquestioning acceptance of this is the situations that the characters have found themselves in, this is why they're here, like that has a lot of shorts, like the short story origins, the film really bleed through to me in how Balls to the Walls crazy it is, and the fact there are like, you know, so if you really think about it, like logically it's kind of bizarre.
I literally saw someone on Reddit say this is the like longest franchise that has yet to produce a single good film.
I would argue that they should watch Hellraiser, but we move.
So Courtney Gaines, who got the role of Malachi, according to IMDb, got it to his audition. He brought like a prop knife and he held the casting assistant hostage at the audition. And he got the role. So I'm like, that is unhinged behavior.
That is very unhinged.
And apparently his own parents were unnerved by his performance in the film. And his friends and people recognize him still, would be like recognizing him as Malachi, and he thought it was a great honor. Sorry, going back to the short story thing, I just feel like I think short stories can be more creative as well, which also is great for horror. Like, they kind of go out of like conventions, or they might give you like a they might even give you like a really known convention. But I also and like then like interpret that lore in a completely creative or wacky way. I think they have a good, like I said, characterization plot balance. Like there's no over explaining, which can sometimes be really tedious in horror, right? But yeah, I think that kind of shines through here. But it does mean that as a film, like a longer film, it's like a bit crazy. Like the things that happen and like you said, the situations they find themselves in and the fact that it's like center dysfunctional couple.
One of the things about this movie that I think kind of like stuck out to me is that like the younger kids had the most common sense, like even more than the adults. Because like the two smallest kids and even the kid who they killed in the beginning, whose name I can't remember, were like all pretty much the youngest or like on the younger side of the kids. And the older ones are the ones who really accepted this like wholeheartedly, did not question anything. And so many of them had did the self-sacrifice when they turned 19, when he like looks at the book and he's like, oh my gosh, these people died so young. Again, not connecting dots as he just saw them perform a ritual. But to me, it's kind of interesting how little the older kids were questioning of things and the way that they constantly talk about denouncing false prophets or not embracing false gods. And the verse that they read at the end in the barn, I think coming off of like the 60s where they had so many cults where people were very like perceptive to people proclaiming that they were some sort of religious figure, they had powers, or there was a reason why they should be followed, and how many people were exploited from that. And then you have like the 70s and the 80s where you start having like absolute, well, there was like Beatlemania, but in the 70s and the 80s you have like the rock and roll era where people are just like following tour buses and following bands around the world and just really in this like absolute obsession with rock and roll figures. I wonder if there's a connection that this film is trying to make between like the like preteen, teenage age people and like their susceptibility to following like false gods. If they're like presented with things that feel like compelling or like rebellious against their parents. Because I feel like the people who are like most bought into it in the film are the older kids, with the exception of Isaac, because I guess he's probably like 13, 14, although we know he's now 24. He looked quite young in the film, but like the other kids around him look to be more like teenagers.
I don't know that I would make that connection simply because like the setting was so intentional as being like the middle of nowhere, and they feel like they don't have a lot of access to like media. So it feels like the thing that they got frenzied about was the things that they were exposed to, which in a small town is like home and church. And so like that was the particular thing that like they made a religious cult as opposed to like what another teen or tween might be obsessed with. But I feel like that same message could have been conveyed in a different setting. But like the setting feels like the most intentional part of this, like even more so than it being about children, is like a commentary on like this part of America and like what its issues are. And it feels just that like the only thing that feels like timely about it is the way that they react to religion, whether it's being fanatical or being suspicious and like laughing at religious people, which doesn't feel like something that like the whole of America is necessarily like having that same type of conversation. Like I feel like on the, I don't know, in a city, maybe there's like a bit more nuance, but there was this very like clear divide between the couple judging, like prejudging everybody in this town before they've even seen anybody. Like it is a damn near empty town. They're like looking at the tumbleweeds and being like, I bet they're Bible thumpers. Like it feels more about that like insider outsider thing than about like what age is more likely to get fanatical.
But like the kids in the movie themselves are not worshiping God. Like they are aware that they're worshiping and dealing with something completely different. And to a certain extent, I think they know that it is of like a dark energy or like a dark force. I mean, they're out here carving pentagrams on people's chest and drinking blood. They have strayed from God's light. And so I think like they aren't like fanatical about God or like religion in that way. It's almost like they've done the complete opposite in terms of rebellion, which is why I thought of it like in connection to like rock and roll, because so many people connect it to like satanic worship and turning away from God, because this is definitely not Christianity that they're doing. Like, the, in fact, I almost felt like the scene where they are like trying to crucify her and they're saying like all the outsiders don't understand them, they have to be killed, to me almost seemed like they were saying like they needed to kill anyone who they thought might still worship Jesus, and like killing in the same way that Jesus was killed. So to me, I thought like it was very far away from Christianity in a way that felt like a direct challenge to what religion was during that time. But I do think the setting is intentional, because it was like, it is like a very religious area of the US, although I would argue the South is far more religious.
I think it's a challenge and a mirroring. Like, the only example they had of religion, they sort of did the same thing, even if it's to worship a dark entity. Like, it still feels like mimicking what they saw adults do successfully, even if it is, like, in rebellious spirit, because obviously they kill the fucking adults. They don't give a shit about what they want or how they do things.
Like, obviously we talked a lot in our folk horror episodes a lot about British folk horror, and I think the way this feels distinctly American is American folk horror, as we kind of touched on at the top of our folk horror episodes, is, like, very much exploring like a backwards like South or a backwards like rural community. And I think one of the ways it like this film plays with that is like that kind of religious fervor. And it also, I think the true horror of this film is like in the much of the way that we talked about folk horror making its own lore or folklore, this film shows the intense vulnerability of the written word. Like, there are scenes and monologues talking about how where the husband, where Bert talks about how they manipulated the Bible and how none of this actually makes sense. And they're actually now, like you said, Taya, more simple than ever. So I think like that's kind of the horror and like folk horror elements come back into this film, because yeah, it's just showing like the sheer vulnerability. And I think that vulnerability or manipulation of the Bible is also feels like a distinctly American type of like subgenre of folk horror to me anyway. Well, there's also other like American things is like, little hints like Job's dad built a bunker for quote unquote when the communists come. So there's definitely like a Red Scare kind of backdrop to this, which also feels like distinctly American. How do you guys feel like, because David, you said that it wouldn't change the film at all if the children were all adults, and I thought that's a really interesting take.
Yeah, I mean, I think like the crux of it though is that they kill the adults. Like, that's the like the thing that starts the plot going. Like, obviously there have to be a different different group that they decide to turn on. But I think that like I guess what I say is that the teenagers in particular to me are trying to act like adults. You know how the little ones who don't buy into it like dress up in little suits and ties and the hat and they like play adult? It feels like everybody is playing adult, even though adults are the enemy in this scenario, or like adults are the person that we're going after. So like it feels like watching kids put on a play. Like, have you ever watched kids do a very adult play in a school and all their clothes are a little too big and they're like doing mannerisms that they see adults doing? I guess that's what I mean by it, is that like they aren't really acting like children. Like, they aren't afraid in the way that children are afraid, and they aren't like, they've just even the ones who participate, I'm like, you've just witnessed a massacre, and they're not acting like they have like the trauma that a child would have after witnessing death. Like, they're moving in the ways that, like, I don't know, adults in this kind of like fervor would move. And even like the way that they speak is very grown up, and you know that they're like putting on airs, and that's the point of them being children and not adults, is for us to like be aware that like it's all kind of posturing. All this, like, I know what God wants more than you do and you should listen to me, is all kind of posturing on the part of adults as well. Because at least in this instance, I don't think he's receiving, maybe he is receiving messages straight from the smoke monster. But like, I think this like whole false prophets thing is also about this like posturing of like knowing more than you really do about the situation. And that is why I could see the same culty type of movie happening with adults, with like a classic cult leader is just like a charismatic guy who's posturing, who's like claiming to know more than you do. It's kind of like an adult pretending to be an adult, being more adult than the other adults. And this just feels like kids doing the false prophet thing and all they know is to copy what adults do. So I guess, like, obviously I do think this is, we put it in Children and Horror, it's a movie about children. But I guess what I'm saying is, like, in action, like, beat for beat, I've seen cult movies that, like, do the same things, but we're not focused on, like, the age of the participants because, like, this is how we expect grown-ups to act anyway. And I think what's off-putting and jarring and scary about this is, like, watching children do and commit the heinous acts that normally are only done by adults.
Yeah, it definitely highlights the innocence versus sinful divide that's prominent in religious movies anyway, because it's like our vessel of innocence are behaving this way, you know? And I do think, yeah, King does imbue his children, his child characters with like a sort of precociousness for sure. But then I also think like the children just like accepting it and like you said, not reacting to trauma is simply like a short story element where people are just like unquestioning of what happened.
I do think Sarah and Joe did seem like very afraid of the others, and they also wanted to run away with the kid at the beginning. And that kid is like terrified, and he does react when he's watching people be like slaughtered in the diner. So I don't know if I would agree that they don't show like any reaction to it.
But he also watches his dad die, and he's just like staring at it.
But I mean, he's in shock. I think like, I mean, they don't really know how to regulate their emotions or really process things the same way. So I think children like. I mean, that's why they have child psychologists specifically, because children are less likely to be like very vocal about trauma and more likely to kind of like reserve themselves and lock it up than adults who are going to like cry and weep and really grieve because they don't know how to do that yet. So that's why like when kids have like a parent die or something, they're more likely to become like violent or act out in school because they just don't really know how to regulate their emotions. I mean, it's possible some of them really bought into it and led with the violence because they also were like processing their traumas of everything that had happened and they didn't really know how else to deal with it. But also I feel like you really do see them revert to children when Vicky and Bert actually, once Isaac comes back from the dead and he takes Malachi with him and they like run off and they're all in the barn, they are like cowering like children and looking to Vicky and Bert for guidance. And the only people who are like kind of helping them are Sarah and Job. But you also get like Bert starts calling Job like Joby and like parentifying himself.
I feel like they act like that because adults are around. Finally, they get to act like kids again.
But I feel like the difference between if this movie was actually adults is like children lack agency the same way that I was saying like women lack agency. And so them overthrowing, quote unquote, the people who have the power, especially in like religion where like children are more like told how to behave, how to be and how to grow up in order to like lead a pious life. This like divide of him coming up with this entirely different religion where they have all the power is like more appealing and makes more sense. But if they were adults, like it would be like a white man who's an adult who has all of the agency and all of the power coming to people to have more power. And like that's the difference to me, like that lack of agency and like the innocence and the lack of power that like children have is like it being flipped makes it like alarming, one, but also like even just like the relationship that they had with like the mechanic guy. He's technically has all the power in the situation because he has the fuel that they're running out of. But they have somehow backed him into the corner where he's the person who thinks like they have all the power and I'm wielding to them. And they even take him out. And then Isaac's like, now how are we going to get fuel? But like that, the amount of power that they have wielded would be completely different if they were adults, because they would all be like on an equal playing field relatively with the women far below them because of how like the women's role in like extremist Christianity or like very religious people have a very different perception of how women should behave that isn't necessarily like as present when you're a child. So I think like the dynamics would vastly change based on them being adults. And so I think like the difference to me is like they all seem fairly equal. Like Isaac and Malachi are obviously in charge. But you also have the teenage girl who's going very back and forth with Bert in the church, and she has people following orders from her. So they seem to be like far more equal. There's not like a direct divide because of gender or expectations of who should be submissive. They like have their own system of moral code to me that is more simplistic as it is when you're a child. Like older kids you naturally look up to more and stuff like that.
Yeah, I get that they have different dynamics, I think that I was just referring to like the culty aspects of like the beats of how a cult movie works and how like the false prophet thing works, I think happens in adults. So I was just like pointing out the mirroring, not that it would literally be the same movie if they were adults. I wanted it to have a moment like, and maybe this is too niche, like the Jimmy Neutron movie, where when all their parents disappear and get taken by aliens, at first they're not traumatized. They're like, yeah, adults are gone. And they ball out and they eat candy and they do whatever they wanted, everything they wanted to do when the adults were there. And then they have a moment where they're like, oh no, I shouldn't eat candy every day. Now I feel bad. Or like, oh no, now I miss my mom because I want somebody to rub my back. Like they have this like turn at some point. And I think that like, the, at least the Malachi and Isaac, like they were so in it that I don't think they would have ever reached that point. Like I feel like they were so convinced of their own autonomy and their own power that like, I think the younger kids were already reaching that point by the end where they were like, oh no, we're running out of food, we're running out of fuel. Like, this is why we had adults around to like help out. But I mean, because it's a short story, because it's a movie and it does end rather abruptly, they never reached the point of like reckoning that like allowed them to like return to being children again, besides like the children who get in contact with the adults who can like let go for a second and be like, okay, now you're in charge, now you make the decisions and you be strong and help us, because the bigger kids are also like physically bigger. Like there is quite a difference between a 7-year-old and a 15-year-old and what a 7-year-old can do to physically stop a 15-year-old. Yeah, it does remind me of like Jimmy Neutron and Proud Family and those like classic like, ah, yeah, kids rule, adults drool type of movies, but much more violent, obviously.
That's what the first like month of uni feels like / college, where like you at first are like balling out on dining hall food, eating whatever, and then at some point you're like, I really want a home cooked meal and like I want to see my family, and like it just kind of sucks. You go through like that drought, but these kids really, I don't know, they really didn't hit that. Except for the younger ones and the one who had his little suitcase. It's like, I don't know if the suitcase was really that important. Like, maybe he would have got out the cornfield sooner. I don't know.
All in all, I won't be taking back roads. I won't be going into any cornfields. And I'm going to be a little suspicious of groups of children.
I feel like I am already very cautious of groups of children because I'm like, they're going to film me and make a TikTok saying I'm a lame millennial or something. But also, I know that I'm safe for this because I would, one, I don't drive, but two, I would never take a back road as I am Black, and that simply is just not a good choice for me, especially in those parts.
Thank you for listening to the Monstrous Feminine Podcast, produced and hosted by Zeba Aurora, Taya Burnett, Mila F., and Louisa Johnson. Big thanks also go to Sebastian Pizarro for our wonderful theme music. Be sure to follow us on Instagram, SoundCloud, and Spotify at The Monstrous Feminine Podcast and on Twitter at The Monfem Pod. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and follow us on TikTok at The Monstrous Feminine Pod for podcast clips and more fun. All information can be found on our website, www.themonstrousfemininepodcast.com. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Brooms up, witches out.